Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Uberlube, the best silicone-based lubricant.
It is my favorite.
Why is it your favorite, Mother?
It goes on really smooth and it stays on long, and that's important.
This is the key. I've masturbated with this thing.
Oh, I like the way you get really shy about that.
I didn't expect to actually admit that during this advertisement, but it lasts a long time.
Do you have to worry about lasting long?
Oh, thank you, Mother. Well, this is a scent-free, color-free, awesome silicone lubricant. Go to uberlube.com, enter promo code MOM, you'll get free shipping. Uberlube.com, uberlube.com.
I think I've heard my mom talk about her sex life to me like 3 times.
As far as I know, they've had sex 4 times and it resulted in 4 children.
My parents are openly talking about it all the time. It's disgusting.
Welcome to Sex Talk with my mom. I'm Cam Poder.
And I'm Karen Lee Poder.
My mother is a sex expert, cougar, and the world's oldest living millennial.
Oh, yeah. And my son is a stand-up comic, mime, and clown.
Together we chat about sex. We're trying to normalize the discussion. We're trying to open up those barriers.
Make it more positive, less shaming.
We're having those uncomfortable discussions so that you can have them too.
That's right. And today, you're in for a very big treat.
We have Dr. Chris Donahue on the show. And this is not like just a boring doctor.
No. He's a sexologist.
This guy has his PhD. He's a licensed sex therapist. He hosts the Loveline radio show. And he has a podcast called The Amber Rose Show with Dr. Chris. He is the author of Rebel Love. This guy is the man to go to learn about sex.
He really is so open and positive and not the least bit shaming of anything.
No. And he's thought all of this through because he has decades of experience coaching people with their sex problems.
And he's really hot, by the way. I might
he's
mention,
a very good looking man.
He's tatted up.
Ripped.
Yep. And I think he gave you some good therapy sessions.
This was like a free therapy session for me, to be honest. We get down to all of the walls I put up and basically conclude that
you need more sex therapy.
That I need more sex therapy. These are all excuses for why I don't want to be close to someone.
But I think the main thing I got from him is that everything is normal. Nothing is abnormal. And that's a great takeaway. I think that if you can look at sex as being something that's continually evolving, that you're never like stuck and you're never, and if you are open and communicative, your sex life is going to be so much better.
Here is a rapid fire list of the things we talked about. How do you like this, Mom?
I love it.
We talk about penis size, erectile dysfunction. Why is sex important in the first place? Why is it okay if you are an asexual or solo sexual to just do you?
Why it's acceptable to wear pink Victoria's Secret panties.
Exactly. We talk about...
We do have a bonus episode on Patreon where we get into more detail about anal. Little teaser there.
That Patreon episode is called Anal as a Benchmark because we literally talk about anal as a barometer. Your comfort with anal or the discussion around it is a barometer for how healthy your relationship is.
And
it's
by the way,
punchy statement.
Yeah. But, okay. So it's patreon.com/sextalk with my mom. Just become a patron. You'll get these bonus episodes, which are really, really, we do them after we're done with the podcast episode. So they really get edgy.
Yeah. They're awesome. And you can get that to that through our website, which is sextalkwithmymom.com, which is also where we really need your help. We need to know who you are. We need to know who we're reaching. So please, please, please fill out a survey at sextalkwithmymom.com. It's right at on the banner of our website and you will be entered. Not only will you be helping us out by giving us this information that could be given anonymously, but if you'd like, you can be entered to win over $300 worth of sex toys, lube, and other intimate accessories from all the finest brands like WeVibe and Uberlube. So please go to sextalkwithmymom.com and fill out that survey. We don't have that many people filling this out, so you have a very high chance of winning. Go to sextalkwithmymom.com. We have a hotline for you to call into. It's Yes Text Mom. Just type that into your phone. On this episode, you'll hear that we feature some questions, and that is just because people have texted us or left us a voicemail at Yes Text Mom. And then we have awesome guests on the show to answer those questions. So do it. Guys, we love this interview with Dr. Chris Donahue. I hope you guys enjoy it as much as we did. And if you enjoy it, please do us a favor. We do this from the bottom of our hearts. Please just go to sextalkwithmom.com and fill out that survey. All right.
And let me tell you about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the sex therapies that Cam is getting now.
That actually kind of worked.
Kinda.
Enjoy. Chris Donahue, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Dr. Chris Donahue.
Come on now.
Sorry. I got so excited about the last name. Okay. So, Dr. Chris Donahue.
Yes.
I said you have the right to exclude anything from this interview afterwards. I can edit it out. And your response was?
I wish I had exercised that right many, many years ago. But unfortunately, that ship has sailed. I go there now.
So, is there anything that you feel like you... Do you still, like... hold back on some of the stuff you share with the audience?
I don't. I think I've done media too long where I'm too comfortable and you just start
It's
expressing.
Happened to us too. It's unbelievable. You get too comfortable.
You forget.
You forget that people are listening. That's so inappropriate.
Yeah. But I think it's also...
Freeing.
Like, yeah,
freeing.
It's freeing. There's like an activistic component to that.
Yeah,
right? Like
totally.
Normalizing these conversations. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what I was thinking about when I said that was... So I do a podcast with Amber Rose and
Can you tell people who Amber Rose is? Because not everyone is familiar with the porn world.
She's a tough one to describe. Ooh, you just called her in the porn world.
Yeah.
So Amber was a stripper who rose to fame through some of the amazing men she's dated. But more importantly, she's a feminist and an entrepreneur. And she does the Slut Walk every year, which is this powerful event that raises money for sexual assault survivors and victims and raises awareness and is body positive, sex positive. It's every year in like October. Really great event.
It just happened, right? In LA?
Just happened. Yep. Yeah. Really, really.
Have you had sex with her?
/ do you want to?
Yeah, I would. I think that direction was,
yeah,
that
I
was
know
directed
it wasn't
towards
Cam.
You.
Is mom always trying to like set you up?
Every time.
Amber's amazing. She's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's why I asked.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm asking you, Chris, not Cam. I know Cam didn't.
I want Cam to have sex with Amber.
So do I.
I'm signing off on this.
I'm signing off too.
Me and your mom are going to work on a list.
Hey,
a wish
if
list.
You want to set me up with Amber Rose, I'm
we
totally
have the bar
fine
high though.
It.
We have the bar really high. Celebrities only at this point.
Yeah, as it should be. Okay, so you were saying.
So a meme was made.
And notice you didn't answer the question, but we're going to let that go.
Okay. So a meme was made, and it was like a quote of a conversation we had, and it was this defining moment of like, oh my gosh, this is my legacy. So basically, Amber said something like, Dr. Chris, is it weird that I sniff the underwear of people I'm dating? And I was like, no. I was like, I totally do that. Like, if I'm dating someone, I keep their underwear, I'm sniffing it, I love people's smells. And it was like this long transcript, and I was like, and it came out, and I said, that's my legacy. Like, I worked so hard on my doctoral programs for that.
Yes. He's a panty sniffer.
The panty sniffer.
Well, because there's pheromones and stuff in the panties, I guess.
And sweat.
Do you know how much money I could have made if I sold mine?
Could. Yeah. Still can.
I still get requests is what I'm saying. I drew a line there. I'm not sending any of my goddamn underwear anywhere.
We're going to work on that because that's a moneymaker.
Yeah,
that's
I will send my underwear places. So
yes, we know,
if any of our listeners want, please just message us, Yes Text Mom. For very little money, you can have my underwear because I actually need new ones. Okay, so Dr. Chris, Donahue.
Yes.
I have a question for you. You have a clinical practice.
Mm-hmm.
What are the two most common things that people come in with for you to
help them
with?
Yeah, I would say number one is, am I normal?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's something really powerful in the am I normal question. And it comes in different styles and configurations. But
men and women are asking this.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Either it's like a relational thing, a sexual thing, a fantasy thing, whatever it is. I just want to be normal. And then the second thing right now is I work with a lot of couples and it falls under we're not having enough sex or I'm married or dating someone who has low sex drive.
Okay, because those are both of our listener questions.
Oh, okay. Really? Wow.
Unbelievable.
Can we not get into that? We're going to get to him. I need people to understand. This is a podcast. We're here with Dr. Chris. He doesn't look like a doctor. he looks sort of like a
badass motherfucker.
Yeah, like he belong on like a motorcycle. You know, he's got tats up and down his arms. He's, you know, built,
ripped.
He's cute. He's young. So he doesn't look like the traditional sex therapist, like Dr. Ruth. He does not look like Dr. Ruth.
Thank you. thank you.
So that's like for the podcast audience out there, and you can see some of this on Instagram and YouTube and all that kind of stuff. But the other thing is, are you personally involved with someone right now? What's your?
Oh, no, you're getting personal first.
Well, I just don't. I want to know who's giving me, you know, advice or whatever. You know.
It's a long.
Are you dating a baboon?
It's a long sad story.
It can't be worse than my sad story. So go on.
It's not. I did hear your backstory, and you definitely.
I talked to you. Okay.
I left an engagement in January.
I appreciate that.
Newly single.
No, I appreciate that because I was just talking to so many people that are getting married right now, and I'm thinking 50% of these people are not going to make it. And I'm wondering, and I ask people all the time who are divorced or separated or whatever, I said, did you know at the time that you were getting married that this is the wrong person for you? And 100% said yes. So I am appreciative of the fact that you broke up an engagement before you went through the whole,
I wish that was the exact story. It's actually that I got left.
Oh.
But even well, so, aren't
even
you...
Then, you're dodgeable at this.
Still. Oof. But aren't you appreciative that she did that to you?
She or he?
It was actually he.
Okay.
So it's the sexual romantic thing. So sexually, I have sex with all gender expressions and bodies. Romantically and dating wise, I tend to date men, trans or cisgendered.
Got it.
What? I'm not shocked.
No, I'm not saying you're shocked. I just laugh at that because it's like word salad as I'm explaining.
Yeah, you gave me a lot of things. Basically, you date men or romantic or with men.
But sexually fluid outside of that.
Right. You could do it all.
The amount of experimentation was there a lot of self-discovery to get to that point of being able to say...
Yeah, because my hetero friends, when I was dating women, because I dated many, many women, and my hetero world was never like, hey, try being with a dude, like, see what that's like. Mm-hmm. No one supported that. And then when I would date a guy and I was hanging out with the gay world, they're not like, hey, when's the last time you're with a woman? Do you miss being with a woman? So I had to find this like in-between space where I could have sex with both and be supported in that. And that's hard to find.
We interviewed a guy recently.
Two episodes ago, we had a guy who considers himself bisexual.
He lives with a guy.
It's the
romantically,
hardest thing.
He's with a guy. Mm-hmm. And he's left feeling alone a lot because of that.
Yep.
Because the straight world is like, when he goes out with women, they're like, wait, you fuck guys? And then when he goes out with guys, they're like, wait, you fuck women?
What kind of weirdo are you anyway?
Yep. It's a confusing place.
Yeah. So did you actually have to learn, like, did you know that going into this, into your practice and into your studies, or did you?
Yeah, I mean, because that's what was great about the crowd I ran with is when I was in high school, I ran with a really diverse, artsy, you know, quote unquote, queer, non-normative crowd. And that's kind of what made me feel somewhat okay about it.
Where are you from?
Philadelphia. And I remember like one of the first experiences that was so powerful is I was dating this girl, Heather, and we were making out and we were at this like house party and we were all drinking. And then a minute later, her like best friend who's a dude came over and I was like, is it cool if I make out with your best friend? She's like, yeah, go for it. And so I was in this like social world where people weren't really that pathologizing of that.
Wow, right. That's
but
awesome.
I had to find it. Yeah. I had to find it in those specific spaces.
So do you believe that sexuality is on a continuum? For example, like one side is completely like 100% gay. And the other one is 100% straight. Do you believe that?
Would this be the Kinsey scale?
Yeah, I guess. Or my own scale. I don't know.
I like it being your own scale. Yeah, put a label on it.
I kind of like it as being mine. But do you believe that?
I think most of us live somewhere a little bit removed from that, right? Like somewhere in the middle. I think I talked about this at a training where I met Cam. But I was part of a project, and they did one of the largest samplings of millennial sexuality. And the millennials identify 56%. More than half do not identify straight. They don't identify as gay, but they don't like the word hetero. It's too confining. So they're like hetero flexible, a little fluid, questioning, or just somehow a little bit moved towards, you know, gayness. And I think that's a pretty honest place.
It's so great compared to like when I was growing up, like the men would never ever admit to wanting anything to do with men. As a matter of fact, I remember one of my friends was telling me how one of the guys she was dating was wanting to wear her panties. And I, in my own like judgmental self, was thinking, oh, I couldn't date a guy who was wearing her panties. That's so fucking weird. Now things have been completely turned upside down.
Now that's on your dating profile.
Now, like if they
like
don't
you
wear,
seek it, you look
they
for
don't
it.
Wear a Victoria's Secret thong. I don't date.
Yeah,
them.
You're like yeah. Cam. I went on a date last night. Dude wasn't wearing Victoria's Secret.
He's out.
It's loud. How boring.
Yeah.
No, but it's like, things have completely changed. Even in the last like since I've been single,
I would change. Yeah.
I have a question about that. So, men that you might want to date that dig deep and find out, you know, the kind of work you do now, what kind of response do you get?
Well, I've been in a long-term 10 and a half year relationship with a guy.
There it is.
And I live with him.
So he's been forced into it.
Yeah.
But he's very, how do I put it? I would say he's very strict with his sexuality. I mean, he will only have sex with one person and one guy, and that's Mandy Patinkin. Okay. And he's open about that.
Wow, okay. You were not expecting that one, were you?
But other than that, he will not have sex with any man. He, you know, he's, and again, who knows if that's society telling him that or he really just really.
But that's the question, right? We'll never know what our true sexuality can be because no one can be better than or beyond toxic masculinity, sexism, homophobia. Like, we'll never know. And that's why I say to people, just hold your sexuality a little lighter because you're probably a little more fluid than you think.
Yeah.
And I used to ask that question to one of my friends who was my age, and he was always telling me how, and he still called me up the other day, I got more stories to you. He's a male, but he only likes trans women.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought to myself, he's gay. He doesn't want to admit it.
Right.
But I don't know that he is, even though he does admit that, you know, he will enjoy sucking a cock.
Right.
So the whole thing is
put on a woman, which is different from being on a man.
Yes.
But I get that because I like dating trans men and cisgender men. So for me, it's about the maleness. Whether they have a penis or vagina is equally as erotic to me or equally as irrelevant. You could even say if you flip it because it's just maleness that I like dating. I like having sex with women. I don't like dating women. I don't tend to like the traditional sexism that I find in some women.
Oh wow! I would love to call this guy right now and ask him, "Come on!"
Oh my God! Are you for real?
I mean, he might get mad at me though.
Next time.
Yeah.
We'll bring him on in a different date after I get permission.
My mom always loves this. In the middle of an interview, she's like, "We need to get this person on the phone." Yeah. It could be the person. It could be the person's parent. It could be an ex lover.
It's so fun.
I'm sure.
Okay, maybe next time we'll get him on here. Okay, so, there was so much I was. I was thinking, by the way, how my parents' generation, I think it's way more rampant that they have like a very strong view on having homosexual kids or queer kids. Whereas I think for my generation, like having children, I do not think it's going to be nearly as big of a deal.
I want queer kids. I think heterosexuality in its purest form is so boring. It's so boring.
I always said that, you know, I wish that I had grown up in a decade where I had even had like, you know, menage a trois or, I mean, it's hard for me to go there now. It really is. I'm comfortable in what we're doing, and that's why I haven't had this like major desire to try anything else, but I wish I had.
Yep. You missed out. Yeah, the millennial. That's how the millennials are living, though. It's really fascinating. The ones I work with, and when I travel the country lecturing, I do a lot of traveling and lecturing. It's the millennials where I learn a lot about what's possible. Because they're less afraid. They're more comfortable pushing boundaries, and they have a lot more community. Like, technology and social media has allowed people to find each other and support each other in their radicalness and their, you know, sexual minority-ness. And so I learned so much for them about how things could be.
But also, you're living in California. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's true throughout the rest of the country, especially in areas that are very like red states, for example. I think you'd still find a lot of prejudice against anyone who wasn't hetero.
I do think college campuses are probably where you really find progressives, you know, like
you would think, but I bet you I would put money on that. It's not always the case.
It depends. Yeah. And
you're
some
still getting gay guys being beaten up.
For sure. I mean, I just had an ex of mine get gay bashed in West Hollywood 3 months ago.
In West Hollywood, which is the most.
That still occurs. And if that can happen there, then that's possible anywhere.
Anywhere.
Right.
So let me ask you something. We had a listener call in asking, she was describing her husband or her boyfriend who she's been with for a while. He just got into forced feminization.
Mm-hmm.
And for our listeners, that basically means that she found that he was buying women's clothes online and was wearing them privately. And then he basically came out to her saying that this was the case and he likes the humiliation associated with this and this feeling like he is forcefully feminized.
Yeah, which is an interesting spin.
Yeah, it totally is.
Okay.
What did you...
No, continue.
Okay, so she wants to know, she basically is like... you know, how do I handle this how do we move forward? Just because she's not attracted to that forced feminization. This is how it, this is his fetish. Mm. How do they handle this?
Okay. So I have a thousand thoughts. Number
Wait,
one,
is it okay that Cam said fetish?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
she was saying it's a fetish in
her
email.
No, I'm just wondering what
I love you asking that. I just had someone else ask me that yesterday. Number one, I love that people are so thoughtful about terms. I tend to use the word kink. Mm. It tends to be a more empowering word. Mm. Some people use the word fetish. That doesn't trigger
me so
much. What about
preference?
I don't like the word preference. It somehow makes it feel so like light or loose. Like mm-hmm. we're talking about a salad or something or ice cream flavor. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like it sounds very pedestrian.
It's your preference to wear
Victoria's
Secret.
I like kink. Okay. Kink is like just invigorating. It
doesn't surprise me that you like kink. That does not surprise me at all. I'm going to use kink now too.
I love that word.
Okay. So we got a kink.
Kink. So basically I'd say a couple things. Number one, are they monogamous? If so, then, you know, your partner, I'd say this to her, your partner's sexuality is limited based on your levels of anxiety. And I would say what he's asking you to engage in is safe. You know, he's not asking you to do something illegal or something that's going to be traumatic for you. So if you love him, find a way to possibly engage in it.
Mm.
Because this is part of his sexuality. And I think partnership, if you're going to be monogamous, is about being willing to honor some things that make you anxious in service of your partner having a fulfilling sex life.
This 2 weeks
Get
ago,
into it.
2 weeks ago, we went through the same thing with this other couple.
So this couple, and you guys can listen to this episode. It was the one with Mickey and Andrew. They talk about porn. And because Andrew was raised in a culture, he was watching porn all the time. He wants more aggressive sex.
Right.
And Mickey, the wife, and they have a child together now, wants more vanilla stuff. She wants to be a more sensual experience. And so does he need to go towards her and try to create that sensual experience for the two of them and learn to love that? Or is it a compromise or vice versa? You know?
Okay, so this is where my answer comes.
And by the way, she's hostile.
Oh, yeah, good to add in there.
She's hostile about it.
She's a hostile witness.
Going to porn. She feels very insecure because he's looking at other women's bodies.
Yeah.
And it makes her feel icky, and she doesn't feel the need for him to do this.
Right.
So it's not even that she's willing to compromise. She's angry about
There's
the fact that he's...
There's so much in that. So I come from like my clinical perspective with this. Number one, she's being forced to recognize that you can't own your partner's sexuality. And whether it's in porn or just because he has eyeballs, you have to acknowledge that we're going to be attracted to other things in the world. And Oof. No matter how much we love you or attracted to you,
right.
we have a right to be oriented towards other things in the world. Two... You don't have ownership even in marriage or monogamy over your partner's solo sexuality. And so he has a right with his solo sexuality to engage in it in any way he wants.
So if he wants to masturbate to porn,
Absolutely.
She should not have a say over
Absolutely.
That.
So I'd want him to set that boundary. And number three, I'd want her to work on her sex phobia, and I'd want her to get more comfortable acknowledging porn exists and sexuality exists beyond that. And I'd want her at some point to maybe get comfortable finding some feminist-centric porn
wow.
and being comfortable with that. And number five, I'd want them both to grow by trying to take on more of their partner's sexuality. I want him to learn how to slow it down and be more present and embodied. And I'd want her to learn how to accommodate him and what he's seeking.
So this is all I was thinking about while you were lecturing.
Oh, really?
Yes, because I was
wow.
like, holy fuck, if only they could hear this lecture. Because
they can hear this podcast.
They can hear this podcast now.
Send them a link.
Because a lot of your lecture was about, or at least a part of it, was about adding stimulation versus adding subtlety.
Yes.
And so this is exactly... what we're talking about here. Is it, do you want to add porn or a sex toy or something to heighten the stimulation?
Right.
Or do you want to get very sensitive and subtle into the other person's needs and body movements and breath and stuff like that? And you were making some points about that.
Mm-hmm. I think also what you're saying is if you can add these extra stuff, you will not get bored.
Right.
If you don't add those sexual stuff, that partner is not feeling that it's not getting their needs met, may go out and find it other places, even though they love that person.
Totally. And that's why I think like the contract of monogamy and exclusivity should have to acknowledge, I'm not going to try to limit you. I'm going to try to help your life be expansive and whole totality and not mm-hmm. limited because.
So I should say to my boyfriend, yes, you can have sex with Manny Patinkin, which I have.
But do you want to be there for that? Does he need to film it or it just can occur on
I
its own?
I didn't think of that. Yes, I need to be there and I need to have him sing while they're having sex.
See? Ask for your needs. support you in asking for your needs. I still got to sit with that one though, Mandy Patinkin.
I mean, here's the deal.
I have questions.
He's one of four brothers, and the brothers, all they do is make fun of each other, calling each other gay. That's right. Like the thing to do, at least, you know, growing up, that was like a thing that brothers like all call each other gay, and it's like the worst thing you could say to each other.
So, I mean, when do you know if you should say you want to be in a monogamous relationship? When do you know, okay, I'm going to work it out with my partner versus this is an incompatibility. I'm going to need to find sexual gratification elsewhere.
And I asked if they had seen a sex therapist, and they had not.
Were they willing to?
They said they were seeing a life coach.
That's different. A life coach is not a sex therapist.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're bringing that up. I mean, again, I support non-professionals doing important work. Like life coaching is great. I work with some clients that see a life coach and see me. It's phenomenal. It's a different way of working. But yeah, someone who's not trained specifically in sex or sexology or whatnot, it's going to be very different working with someone who is than someone who's not. And someone like them, I think, should be. Mm. But so I guess I'm one of those people where I say you should have sex sooner than later. Too many people delay sex thinking that if we're attracted enough or I love you enough or whatever, that it's just going to work itself out. Compatibility will be there. That's not true. And so whether you start, you get to choose which level of intimacy you explore compatibility around first. I don't care which one, but you have to go through them all. And if you don't have sexual compatibility, you should not be monogamous, period.
So that's, you believe in having sex on the first date?
Absolutely.
So it won't go. Yeah.
Wait. All my long-term relationships have begun that way, and it's through that we learned a lot about each other and progressed, and many years go by, and we're living together, and we're happy.
He said, you said this during your speech, and I immediately frantically put it in my phone. I go, I love this. He just said, it's better to get to know someone sexually first than a coffee date.
It's in both my books.
See, I agree with you because I've definitely done that on many occasion. But the thing I don't agree, and I always think, and I always tell Cam the story, and I've told this 1,000 times on the podcast, you don't want to go buy a car without trying out a few models first, okay? It'd be a nightmare. But on the other hand, sometimes building that tension and that excitement, you know, you can't go back to fucking, I mean, you can't go back to kissing only when you're, you know, already had sex. It's just hard to do that.
And
yeah, no, I mean, it is kind of fun to just to start all the teasing stuff first for a few dates at least. Until, I'm not saying that it's my thought. I'm just saying it's possible that there's two sides.
Yeah,
to it.
I don't disagree.
So where I was coming from towards, you know, I asked this at the end of the lecture, because as our listeners know and as you've learned, I'm way more like less sexual adventurous. Like,
what is that about?
I don't know. I was going to ask you what that's about. I'm nervous about.
Are you dating?
I am dating, but here's what I get nervous about. I get nervous about being on a different page than my partner emotionally. Mm-hmm. So if we're having sex, does this mean to them that this is going to be a fucking marriage now? Or is this just a fun night?
Mom, we had sex last night. Are we married? Well, it's a good question, because what I'm hearing that is you have empathy and care and concern for how you're impacting this other person. That's beautiful. But I want to live in a culture where we all understand that sex or a date or a fifth date and all that isn't a promise of anything
until
we sit down and discuss
it. And girls have big girl pants and they can handle it if you break up.
Totally. Yeah. It's just, that is a hard question. Okay, so that's one. Number two, we've had someone on the show, Tyomi, the Glamazon, who was talking about soul ties. She's very sex positive and pro-sex. But she's like, when you have sex with someone, you are exchanging DNA. You are connecting your souls. That kind of freaks me out to do that with someone.
But that's a very dramatized understanding of sex. Like, I agree with that, some of it, and some of it, like, no. I mean, you are impacting another person when you have any interaction with them. So if I go into Starbucks and I get coffee, how I interact with the barista is changing them. They're either walking away from having waited on me thinking, yeah, people are nice in the world, or people are horrible like I thought all morning. So, like, we are impacting people, right? Like, we're making them feel better in the world, feeling safer about sex. You know, girls that date you or have sex with you are probably like, yeah, there are good guys in the world. So, like, you're impacting them. But a soul connection, no. I mean, you can have anonymous one night hookup sex that's powerful and intimate and connected and quote unquote relational because it's another person, and you can walk away nourished and better for it. But I don't think that means you owe them something or you need to continue that connection. And maybe you had a beautiful soul connection for 35 minutes. Awesome. You walk away from that better for it, but that doesn't mean you owe them more. I feel like that soul word is an implication that, like, you owe them more and should be careful. I don't agree with that.
I think it more like on a spiritual level where it gets a little, I mean, this gets a little out there and sure. esoteric.
That becomes yeah. your life force or something. To...
No,
but
no,
is it implying that there's a depletion?
No,
or what's
I don't agree with that. Okay. So mine is really just like an invisible tie I have with someone.
Beautiful.
I don't know.
I want as many as I can with people.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I mean, but I'm less trusting. Like I want a lot of people close to me in many different ways. I want close friends. I want close casual sex partners. I want close relational partners. I want to fall in love and be committed on that level. I want a lot of relationality. And so I hope I have a soul tie with everyone I come in contact with, whether we're sexual or not. Mm. You know, like I'm connected with the two of you. I think you're both awesome. Mm. I'd love to help Aww. You guys figure out your career and any questions I can answer. So like, I like relationality, but I don't feel like I don't think it's a misuse.
You are more trusting than I am, I think.
And he's less anxious, obviously.
Yes. Okay, so
but it's practice. I put my time in.
Yeah.
Right? With the dating and the sex.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, Uberlube. Mother, why do you love Uberlube?
I've tried them all, kid. And I got to tell you, Uberlube is the way to go. First of all, let's talk about the packaging. It's in a beautiful glass bottle. They have two different types. One is like this, you know, nightstand type, which I use. And the other is a travel one.
Yeah, if you guys were at all wondering whether my mother is bashful with her nightstand, it's amazing what is left out there.
Yeah, but Uberlube
is a crown jewel on your nightstand.
Yes. My friends all love it too.
So you can use it for sex, but you can also use it for sport.
Your hair.
I actually would use this. I put this in my butt to prevent me from chafing.
That's TMI.
While I run.
Okay. Also nipples, by the way. Anyway,
look at that.
But I got to tell you something else it's great for.
What?
Removing your makeup.
Which is also useful for me.
What?
I wear my makeup sometimes. This is very good for removing my makeup.
Of course. But anyway, the bottom line is...
It's the best lube for sex for sure.
That's
the
main thing.
It's long-lasting, it's scentless, and it doesn't affect your pH balance negatively. I highly recommend going to uberlube.com and entering promo code MOM for free shipping. Uberlube. UBERLUBE.com. The third is a big, big issue
okay.
for me. And this is... I get terrified of getting STDs or pregnancy.
Okay. I'm glad you call that out. I would say a couple of things. Number one, you do realize that the bulk of STDs are handled by a shot in the butt and a pill and you get back to life.
Yes.
And I talk about this all the time where, you know, we're so afraid of any viral or bacterial thing that comes from sex, but not from otherwise. Like, I know I always do that. I'm such a table slapper. If you know, you should be more worried about the doorknob in your building because you could be on your couch pooping your pants with snot coming out of your nose for 10 days over that. But if you get gonorrhea or chlamydia, you go, you get a pill, a shot in the butt, and 2 days later you can be having sex again.
In the
it's
ones,
not that deep.
No, the ones
that last forever.
He's talking about herpes.
Okay,
no,
well,
not just
here,
herpes.
Okay, but let's talk about herpes
or HPV or
herpes simplex 1. 80% of us have it.
Right, we're talking
herpes 2. Most of us have come in contact with it and either have it dormant or we haven't become infected with it. You have encountered it if you've had sex in the world.
Oh, wow.
Most STD testing doesn't test for herpes because it's assumed that you've come in contact and the tests aren't even that great. You can't live afraid of that. I work with people that are positive for herpes 1 and 2 and they go on to live amazing lives, and most of them it's not active, and when it is active they deal with that. I mean, that's just part of being out in the world.
So I think what he's saying though is if he's borderline on having sex with someone and he finds out they do have herpes too,
yes.
he doesn't want to take that risk. Why would he?
But you are, because most people don't know and aren't getting tested for that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that is part of being out in the world.
And what if someone tells you, hey, I do have herpes?
Mm-hmm.
If someone were to tell you that, would you be like, okay, that's fine? Are you?
If I was dating someone and... they told me that they were aware of the fact that they have herpes, which again is rare because mm-hmm. it's something that most people aren't aware of that they have or been tested.
It's not so necessarily true.
Yeah. Herpes too. Yeah, absolutely. Most people, when they get an STD test, they do not test for herpes. They test for the big four, and that's left out. And a lot of people that have herpes simplex too,
they've had outbreaks, but the
bulk of them don't. And so most people, if you have sex partners, will come in contact with someone who has it and doesn't know it because there's no outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to have sex differently. You do have to think about that. But, you know, I don't know how to answer it other than...
So what would you do?
What would I do?
Assuming that you don't have herpes too.
For sure. I would take all the precautions I can, but you would have to knowingly step into that with the awareness that it's possible that you'd become positive as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's in there. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what are your options?
That's really interesting. Okay, here's something. Mm-hmm. And I think this one I don't talk a lot about, and it might be the final block for me.
There's a lot.
I know this is why I'm not having
it's
sex.
Just, it's
right?
an it's onion. Nice. It's an onion. It's a total onion. Keep pulling the layers off of Cam.
It is hard for me to express sexual desire for someone. And, you know, I guess perhaps it's an unconscious fear of rejection. Or it's just maybe there's not a lot of people I actually do want to have sex with.
So when you say express sexual desire, you mean it's rare that I'm attracted to someone sexually? Is that what you mean? Or no, you'll have that, but you don't.
When you say express, what do you mean? Like say I'm turned on by you?
Yes. So to tell someone that would be
terrifying. But you experience it in your body? It's just about the communication of it?
It kind of depends. It's probably not as strong. Like, it seems like you have an urge, right?
Why? Am I looking at you a certain way? I have urges.
I think he just wants to have us all do a threesome right now.
And I think because I'm so not sexually active, mm-hmm. that it doesn't even register.
There's two rules
when
I've learned. The more sex you have, the more sex you have. The more sex you have, the more your sexuality tends to be activated, stay active.
I think you're right about that. Even if it's masturbating, I think
totally.
It's true. Yeah.
I agree.
And so that's one of the things I'll say. Like, if people want more sexuality, I tell them you have to have more sexuality, masturbate more, have sex. But you also could be someone, you know, in the true spectrum of sexuality, there's sexual and there's asexual. And we all are somewhere on that spectrum. You mm-hmm. might lean more asexual. Mm. You might not have a truly powerful, consistent sex drive. You might not be fully asexual, but you might be closer to that angle.
Yeah. I found that if I find someone that I trust that I'm in a relationship with, my sex drive is like through the roof.
But you're also having more sex.
And I'm having more sex. Yep. Right. But if I go like long periods of time, then I'm kind of like, okay, I can do without this. And so when I encounter people on the street, I'm not thinking of them necessarily as sexual beings or someone that I can be having sex with. Mm. I'm thinking of like...
But there's nothing wrong with that. Be more confident, I think, in where you're at. That's what I'd say.
You're normal.
Yeah. Don't panic. There's no like, I wouldn't, there's no right level of sexual interest or activity to have.
Even with normal relationships like myself and D's, my boyfriend. There's times that we like want to have sex all the time. There's times we don't want to have sex for 2 weeks. It just really depends.
I think the panic comes in thinking like, oh, I'm 29. Like this is, I'm in a, this is a great time in my life. I should be fucking making the most of this.
Tell him about the old man that you met in Spain.
The old man that I met in Spain was like 80 something years old, I asked him for one tip through all of his time living. And he goes, use your penis before it falls off.
He's not wrong.
See,
I mean,
he fucked with Cam's head.
Yeah, one of the things that remind
you
people is
you fucked with my head. You remind me of that story all the goddamn time.
Yeah, it's right and wrong. It's right in that biologically, for men, penis owners, every decade of life, you're adding another 10% chance that you're going to encounter erectile issues.
Tell him that.
But, and your mom will agree with this part.
Oh, man.
But in terms of like sexuality, what I hope is as we age, we have more body confidence, more sexual confidence. Our sex life can be better because of those things. We're more aware of who we are and what we want. We can ask for things. So your biology might not be keeping up, but here's the thing. If a good sex partner, you don't need your penis. You have fingers. You have a tongue. You can use toys. Like those are good sex partners where they're not obsessed with erections and penetration and can just be more fluid. So don't panic. A lot of women also... Not every woman wants penetration, and most women don't orgasm from penetrative sex. And so you're going to be a good partner
if you understand
other things.
Hear that?
Yeah.
A lot of women do not get that. They think they have something wrong with them. They're not having orgasms through penetrative sex. And I'm like, bring in the dildos.
Exactly.
Bring in a vibrator.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I know men who are like, if my girl has to use a vibrator, there's something wrong with me. I'm not pleasing her. And it has nothing to do with
But that's that toxic masculinity we have to get away from where, you know, if a guy's using a sex toy on a girl, it's part of you. It's in your hand. You're using it on her. You're in the experience.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah. And get over it. It's just
same with using porn or same with dressing up or same with using blindfolds or handcuffs or whatever you need to do to get yourself off. Who cares?
So this is great going hashing through all this. I feel like I'm getting a therapy session.
I'm gonna send you an invoice.
Yeah, thank really,
you. I know, seriously. So one thing that I know for certain for me, and I'm sure is for some of our listeners, we have a listener question actually related to this, is that I'm very career focused. Mm. That like puts my career and my work, this podcast, talking about sex over actually having sex a lot of the times. Mm. Like, I know if I stay out late, like last night I was invited to a party that started at 11. If I fucking went to a party that starts at 11, stayed out till 1 or 2, I'm be shot for this interview.
Right.
And that would fucking blow.
Right.
So this is me not having sex.
So there's times in your life.
Sex usually goes until like 4 a.m.
But there's times in your life you should enjoy yourself.
Yes. Well, I want to hear Dr.
I'm hearing a lot of excuses.
There are a lot of excuses.
Yeah, like,
but these are all things that go through my mind.
For sure. You've really built up a big wall that blocks you from sex and relationality.
Yes.
And I like you gave me all those reasons, and they're honest, and I believe that they're valid, but I also have to believe that they're good reasons and that there might be something else, and you're finding these good reasons to help protect you, because all that makes sense.
Oh,
but there's something
wow.
bigger than that, because you keep throwing up a wall, and every time you list all the pieces, you add like another, and then there's like yet another.
Well, it keeps triggering.
But,
yeah,
you know, I work a lot. I have a clinical practice every day. I do a nightly radio show. I also have a podcast. I do lectures around the country. My new book's coming out. I'm going on a book tour. I write a weekly sex and relationship column. I'm about to do a web series. I have a TV show in development. I still have sex and go on dates.
I was gonna say, you still have sex.
I still have sex and go on dates. It still happens somehow. I don't know when these days. I still go to the gym somehow.
You have
too.
Energy out the wazoo, though.
I do.
Right.
Like you can feel it coming off.
But also,
you know?
Cam, you're the type that like feels like if you're not doing something productive, you shouldn't like you don't believe in like Netflix and chill. You just believe
it's not that I don't believe in it, but it's hard for me to actually do it.
So you struggle to do leisure and pleasure.
Yes.
Sex is
and
that.
Sex
is
not leisure productive. And pleasure.
And
yeah.
When I go on silent retreats, I'm just totally fucking zen'd out.
Wait. So talk to me about this. You go on silent retreats.
And yes. He loves
to
he
kind
gets
of relax
so horny
to,
when he does.
And I get horny.
Wow.
Is this fucking
crazy? Okay. This is, wait, I got to sit with all this. Okay. Okay. I don't want to turn this into a therapy session on Cam.
I would love it if it is because.
But yeah, Cam, what the fuck?
I know. This
what do you do with the horniness on your silent retreat?
I sit with it. There's not much you can do on the silent retreat.
He goes behind a bush, whacks off real quickly, and then he comes back.
That's fascinating.
Wait, you masturbate when you're on a silent retreat?
No.
Do they advise against that, or is that a personal rule?
Roommates.
There's not much space or time or interest, actually.
When you get back from the silent retreat, you'd masturbate then.
Probably, yeah. What do you think?
I don't have a thousand thoughts. So again, it's very possible that you, and again, these are new words and new concepts, and so we're still playing with them, figuring them out. And again, I do write about this in my new book, Rebel Love, but you might skew more solo sexual, you might skew more asexual. Like you're just talking a lot of attributes, even though, again, I think that there's some block. I do think that authentically, you might skew a little more asexual or solo sexual because everything you're telling me is skewed away from people, even though you said you do have a high sex drive when with a partner. But I'm also wondering if you're the right person to be going on silent retreats.
What?
Oh, interesting.
I don't think
you're
it's a bad thing.
Here. Don't do
but I think
that.
You're learning. I think you're organizing your brain still around downtime as productivity. I don't know. I would have a whole treatment plan for you.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah.
I think I need to kind of start seeing
you. You don't understand. Now it's like I'm going to get calls at 2 a.m. I was thinking of what that damn Dr. Chris said. I think I should cancel a goddamn silent retreat. I'm going to start.
But I would definitely say masturbate more. Make it a priority to masturbate more as a way to just try to keep your sexuality.
See, now Cam, he's prescribing it as a doctor, so you have to do it.
And by the way, throw this into the mix. When I'm with partner, I often prematurely ejaculate.
Okay. That doesn't shock me, though.
No, he wants help with this.
No. I don't want to. So
yes,
first
you do.
Of all, this might have changed over time, and I think it has.
Okay.
However, I do want to know if you think that it is connected to my whole perceived, how I perceive sex
yes.
in general.
In theory, loose working theory, diagnosing from afar, it is possible that before you're even connecting, getting intimate, engaging, having to encounter all these anxieties and this big wall, that you're ejaculating, getting it done, moving on, and just not really being present in the moment. Yeah, could be a protective mechanism. Or you just have a really hypersensitive arousal system.
I'm going with door number two.
Okay.
I'm hypersensitive.
But that's beautiful. Like, and again, we shouldn't shame that. I wouldn't.
No.
There's not a problem in that. Like, great.
Just
you know, use
do it again
you,
right
yeah,
away.
Yeah, exactly. Use your second erection. Like a lot of guys aren't comfortable with the idea of a second erection. Like it's going to take some time maybe, or don't use your erection. Like, you know, whoever your partner is, you've come, great, high five. Now you use your fingers, you use toys, you use your tongue. If your penis gets hard, use it. If it goes soft again, don't use it. Go back. Like sex doesn't stop.
This has been the solution for my problems.
Okay. Are your partners supportive of that or do they panic?
No, it's mainly my own shame related to it. Just because I've heard, premature ejaculation is so embarrassing.
No.
Like,
oh, it breaks my heart when I hear that stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when you can get it up again right away. Who cares?
Yeah. Erectile issues aren't usually actual issues. It's more erectile shame. Mm-hmm. They come and go.
What do you do for the men that have written into us about the opposite, that they just can't get hard over time. And the more that that happens, the more they get, you know.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. Because part of it is, you know, you want to make sure you're having sex with partners that are mature enough and sophisticated enough to not shame you. And so if your partner's shaming you, please stop having sex with them.
No, but even if it's like one night stand.
That, I would say a couple things. Like, number one, make sure you're having sex that you want to have. I, believe it or not, work with some guys where when we really do the deep work, they realize, I'm not having sex that's even turning me on enough. And that's part of it. It's not my body. It's that this is boring.
No. I think like, that can be in the people that I'm referring to have said that it just has become now a pattern, that they're that psychologically they didn't get hard the one time, so now they're scared every time that they're not going to get hard. It's all psychological in their head.
Totally.
Because they can get hard masturbating. So obviously it has to do with something with the
person. And that's a long-term therapy issue, because there's so much work in that and so much to unpack. No, because again, the thing with the things like Viagra is you're forcing your body to engage in a process it's not comfortable or willing or open or interested in doing, and you're bypassing doing the psychological work, because there's something happening and you're saying, I'm going to ignore that and just do a shot of alcohol or do a Viagra, and I'm just going to ignore what my body's telling me, what my psychology's telling me. I'm not going to unpack all this, and you're missing out on the growth.
That, these men
reinforces the fear. I only got hard because of the pill. I better keep taking that pill.
Right, or the person who's saying if they take the pill and they do get hard and they're able to have the normal normal in the sense of it, they'll be able to maintain an erection, then next time they can start weaning themselves off the pill.
Good luck. I mean, a lot of guys I work with, they get anxious about being off the pill, and is it going to work this time? Will it not? They take some of the pill. How much I take this time? I mean, that's why I keep my clients off of it. I'm like, we're going to learn how to work with what you have.
Yeah. What did you say?
We got to listen to this shit, because we are often asked about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We often say, maybe just have the pill on hand, but I guess that's not a great idea.
No.
In the way I work, I have them not. I want them to learn to work with where their body's
at. What do you tell
these
people that if someone came into your practice and he's like, listen, every time I'm with a new person, I get so nervous that I can't get hard.
Yeah.
What do you do?
My quick off-the-cuff answer would be, you have to work on instilling confidence in sex without it. And so I'd say to them, you don't have sex with your penis then. When your penis isn't hard, you don't have sex with it.
So you have to know the person then.
Totally. Or you have sex in other ways. And if you get hard, incorporate that in. And if you don't. But yeah.
Okay. Listener question.
Thank you for that. I think that's a pretty common question.
Totally. That is something we get all the time. So this person said she has been, she just got married 2 months ago. She's been in a rut for over a year where she has not been wanting sex or feeling turned on. She wants this sexual relationship to work. What does she do?
We kind of discussed this with you.
Yeah.
Are there particular...
1,000 things. Like, you know, I'd have to get a little bit of a sexual history from her, because I don't know, had it been there? Is it depending on the partner they're with? What's going on with their current... Because sometimes it could be like, A, your current partner isn't safe to be having sex with. Maybe he's abusive, verbally abusive. Mm. I don't know. 2, maybe you're not wanting to acknowledge that you're not sexually turned on by or attracted to them. You just really love them. They're a great guy. 3, maybe the sex is boring. 4, maybe you're skewing more asexual. And like, that's coming out of the woodwork now. People are realizing like, I just am not a sexual being. So there's so many things that could be in there.
Yeah.
I just remember when I was initially married, we had a ton of sex, and then you start having like, after a couple of years or whatever, it's not as exciting anymore. It's the same person, you know, and it's more of an obligation than it's, and then it's, you bring kids into the picture, you never want to have sex.
See, like, Cam, see what you did?
That's all my fault.
Kids fucked me up big time with the sex life. Cam. But I mean, at those days, like, women, if you're going to masturbate, you do it in private. You don't even do it in front of your husband. It was like definitely a different day then. So I don't know.
It's about diversifying. I mean, look, this isn't a statement pro or against monogamy, but inherently monogamy is a quieting down, watering down of a sex life, because you're limited by your partner and there's nothing new or novel about this person you've been with for that many years who you also have to fight with about laundry. And so I work with some couples in all age brackets that are coming and saying, let's talk about open relationships, non-monogamy, or we want to stay monogamous, but what are ways we can diversify and add novelty to what we're doing?
Bring in the porn.
Yeah, for sure.
So...
But in that particular case, it could just be that she doesn't feel sexual. Maybe she gained weight. Maybe she needs to wear a sexy lingerie underneath her clothing.
Maybe she's not attracted to her partner anymore. Maybe he's not a nice guy and she shouldn't be wanting to have sex with him. I mean, there's so much.
Maybe
in there.
She should read erotica.
Yeah.
So when you said this was one, you said at the beginning, this is one of the two biggest things that people come in for. Yep.
Couples, it's probably the number one couples thing.
One person wants to have sex more than the other?
Correct.
And what if they do not want to open their relationship up? Or one person doesn't?
This is where I say to them, part of the work is going to be mourning the loss of the sex life you thought you're going to have, or having this really dynamic sex life. Because to be with this person in monogamous relationship means it's going to be a little watered down.
Okay.
Like I always said, I'd never be, even if I was with Brad Pitt or George Clooney, I probably still
sure
wouldn't be like I eventually I get bored.
Unless it was Mandy Patinkin. That's a
no, that's not me. That's my boyfriend.
I know, just say we all share that fantasy.
No, we do not.
But the mourning the loss is a huge thing for people. I say that sometimes. I've even worked with couples where they come in together and I always use this one example because there's two women that I've worked with and they both said to me, I can't imagine going another 1 year, 3 years or 5 years in my marriage and not having my husband grab me, smack my ass and say like, you're so hot, I'm going to fuck you. And then I look over at the husband and there sits a loving guy, but you're looking at him going, he does not have that in him.
Oh,
and he never
wow.
will. That's not who he is. And their relationship to stay together in that way is about mourning the loss of this radical dominant sex partner you never had and mm-hmm. never will. And that's what I say to them. Did you ever have that? Well, no. It's like, okay, well, you know who you committed
you're
to monogamously.
You know what? I got shivers. You're absolutely right. Even with me and my boyfriend, I remember him like saying something the first night we met and I was like, that's scary. You know, but that's who he told me who he was.
Yes.
You know,
listen, they're telling you from the door who you are sexually.
Right.
Don't think that's going to shift.
Wow.
And so that's why I say to people, like, don't make commitments until you've had sex and explored that. You can wait as long as you want, but don't make commitments. Don't mm-hmm. buy a house, get married, be monogamous,
so
be exclusive,
stupid.
All these things, because it's own track of compatibility and chemistry. And if you're going
to
be monogamous, explore
it. You have to go with that river, though. I mean,
totally.
It may change.
Totally.
Yeah.
One person may want to open the door. One person may not want to open the door. One person may want to start using porn. One person may not. And then you got to be able to have another contract.
And it's hard because, as you know, I'm out there dating. I'm dating. And it's a difficult moment of me trying to be confident and authentic enough sexually where they can really assess compatibility with me. So I try to bring it from the door, but I don't like, you know, dump it on them on the date. Like, let me list all the things I'm into, mm-hmm. but I try to bring it in early on so we can really assess compatibility. Cause people go on a date and they usually think my goal on the date is to make sure you like me. So I'm going to present in the way I need to say, and I'm like, that is the worst model of dating. Right. Show up authentically. And if it doesn't go well, that's a sign of success. Mm. We assess compatibility. It wasn't there. Good to know.
Yes. What you said during the lecture, you were like, it's not to be liked. You shouldn't go on a date to be liked.
Date to be known, not to be liked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Date to be known.
I agree.
It's phenomenal.
I think if someone doesn't want me, then fuck them.
Yeah, and you want to know.
I would like to
know
that.
False representation.
And I am confident enough to say, if they don't want me, there's something wrong with them.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
You're
lost, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
But it's important.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. We talked and we're coming towards the end.
Okay.
So
how could that be?
I know. It's gone so fast.
I didn't even ask about penis size. God damn
it. We'll get there. We have time.
We got time. So why is sex so important? You've created, you know, your whole life. This touches on your whole life. So what is so important about sex that we need to be thinking about?
Good question, Cam.
To me or to the world? You mean like in general?
I would love to hear about to you and then maybe to the world.
My answer for me is, so I, you know, did my master's in mental health. I did a doctoral program in clinical psychology. And when I was doing all that training, I saw that we always avoided sex and we didn't acknowledge sex as a really powerful entry point to understand someone relationally and psychologically. And I thought that's what a missing thing. And then I went on to study human sexuality and sexology. And that's where we did kind of focus on that. So for me as a clinician, from that perspective, I can learn everything about someone by exploring their sexuality, your body esteem, your self-esteem, your communication skills, trauma, boundaries. It's all in there. And so I love that entry point. It's so powerful. And then culturally.
Oh, wow.
We're
so it's a way to get to know. It's
everything.
Really just a
everything.
Way to relate to someone.
And like your mom said, if you listen, people are showing you all of these things. And so when you're having sex with someone, that's why I love sex sooner than later, is you can explore all of that. None of that comes up at coffee.
Mm-hmm. I always say, like, if the guy is a bad kisser, I'm speaking from a woman's perspective, that shows a lot.
It won't
or
work for
if
me.
If you're having sex with someone and they're very selfish, that's going to show you a lot about their life.
Yes.
How it's going to be in life.
Totally. No, but that you're nailing it. That's my
I've had sex with this guy. It was again, it was like a quick one night or whatever when I was single, and doesn't do anything. He doesn't try at all to excite me. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, he just came quickly. And all right, the second time around, he'll definitely. No, he just puts on porn, gets hard again, does the same thing again.
Yeah, God
bless. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? That was the last date you're going to be on with
me,
buddy.
Yeah, like, hi, I'm a person. I'm over here.
I did.
And are you going to be selfish in every other domain as
Absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely.
And I agree with you. It's a powerful thing. And that's why I try to remind guys, like, remember that everything you're doing during sex and after sex is a communication of how empathetic I am, caring I am, how relational I am. And so I also say, like, post-orgasm is a powerful communicative moment. And I say to guys, use it wisely.
Don't fall asleep.
If you fall asleep or get up and go, whatever you do, you're communicating how much closeness you can tolerate, how much intimacy you want.
Oh, wow.
All of that is in there. It's a powerful moment to, like, continue sexuality. Maybe, you know, not necessarily with our bodies or anatomy, but there's still room for more intimacy in that moment and check in on your partner.
But it is kind of hard, I think, especially for men, because there is so much, like, oxycodone released, and you're tired. Cool. You want to go to sleep. Did I say it wrong?
I always do this.
I get everything wrong when it comes to pronunciation, but you get the idea of what I was trying to say.
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay.
Hang in there, guys.
Yeah. Wake the fuck up. Yeah. Drink some coffee.
For sure.
That is hilarious.
It was the worst. Like, I had guys that like turned over, started snoring. I'm like, get out of my room.
I just had sex a couple days ago with someone, and I literally was like, hi, someone else is here. Like the whole time I felt they didn't acknowledge that there's another human being in the room and my needs were totally left unattended to. And I was like, that was horrible.
Did you tell that person?
Selfish. No, we're never going to see each other again.
But isn't that great that you have that piece of information?
Totally. I want people to be more sensitive to that stuff. Yep.
So, there was another thing I wanted to talk to you about. How you felt like everything is like a sexual, you're constantly carrying your sexuality around with you.
Yes.
Do we have a quick second to chat about this?
We do. So my whole spiel is I'm always reminding people that like we talk about sex as though it's something that happens just with our anatomy or at home or with another person. I say to people, our sexuality is always operating on us. It's what I wore today. It's how close I'm sitting to both of you. It's how I'm maintaining eye contact or not with you. Mm. It's how I'm speaking. It's how close I'm standing to someone in line at the coffee shop. Like our sexuality is always operating on us. It's not something we can turn off.
It is kind of like our relationality.
Yes. Completely.
Wow.
And we try to separate them out, but it's all interconnected.
I fucking love that.
I was talking to someone today, a friend of mine, and she was saying she's over 60. She's like, her husband really appreciates that she's always dressing sexy. And so many women after the age of like 50 or 60 don't think that they need to be sexy anymore. They just don't dress like that anymore. And they dress grandma-like.
It's heartbreaking.
And for me, it's like, I've always dressed like this. I've dressed like this when I was younger.
Cat ears too?
For our listeners, she's wearing cougar ears. It's Halloween.
Oh, they're cougar ears. I was like, is this Halloween or is this just how you live? No.
I always wear them.
Because in my head, you're at the grocery store wearing those, just so you know.
No.
My fantasy.
I am
no shame at all. It's beautiful. But I love that what you're saying, like your sexuality is ever present, and tap into that erotic capital. Use your sexuality like we do other skills or parts of ourselves that we're proud of. You know,
get away with a lot of stuff.
Lead with your sexuality. I built a media career based on my sexuality. It's not just that I'm smart, it's also that I'll wear tight shirts and I have biceps. Like I utilize that. It's okay to access and utilize our sexuality.
You know what really works well? When you're trying to rent a car, you get in line with a really cute guy. I get upgraded all the way.
See?
If I see that it's like a dowdy old woman, I'm like, I'm not going to that line.
You're getting screwed that way. Yep.
How can you share your book or anything else you'd like to
plug?
No,
we
got to
talk about penis size.
Okay, fine.
That's another number one. Yeah. I have a video where I've interviewed like porn stars or whatever. 6 million views about penis size. How important is it? Why is it so important? And what can you do to alleviate some of this the shame that the micro penis guys have?
So this is a big component actually of my newest book, Rebel Love, where I talk a lot about how body steam and body positivity is deeply tied to penis shaming and body policing, and how luckily we're in a moment now where we're calling that out, but we don't tend to call that around the penis conversation, where we'll hold people accountable to mocking fatness or talking about stretch marks or cellulite and all these different things, but we allow and support people making fun of penis size. And I always say that's body negativity. That's body shaming. We don't do this. And I mean, Amber talked a lot about that on air because that was something that came in a lot as well. So I think it starts culturally. We have to stop mocking penis size as though it's something that someone's responsible for or has asked for. It's no different than height or weight and other characteristics. And so culturally, we have to stop making it an acceptable joke to make. But for guys, it's really hard to be confident in a culture that says that that's not acceptable. I want porn to have more diverse bodies. I also want them to show porn that has penises that aren't staying hard, because that miseducates that they always get hard and stay hard. So show penises that are coming and going in terms of erection. Watch porn that's more diversified, I'd say to guys as well. Stop watching porn that's reinforcing you have to have that kind of penis. Hmm. Things like that.
Well, what about the guys who really legitimately have a very small penis? And I got to tell you something. This one guy, I stopping a patron of mine because I said something about penis size. He has a micro penis, and he said he's in his like 50s or 60s, and every woman that he's dated has left him because of his small penis.
It's difficult. I mean, we're so penetratively obsessed. Guys like that have to get comfortable with oral sex and finger play and toy play. And
it's not he's comfortable with that. He's
good.
Done, but the women that he's with are
women. Knock it off. You don't want to be body shamed. Don't body shame guys. It's no different than a guy making fun of your stretch marks.
But it's not
as
body shaming in the sense of, what about the woman who really wants a guy that has a normal, right?
Then,
no, 5 to 6 inch normal penis.
You know, it's hard because I also work with some guys that are averagely sized and they don't feel like the vagina is tight enough. And we could shame women and say, tighten your vagina.
That never happens.
Yeah. And so it falls under body shaming, I'd say to women, if you're one of the one third that needs penetrative sex from orgasm, then maybe you got to use a dildo. Like yeah. it depends on what you want your life to be about. I said to some people in an obnoxious way, but meaning it seriously, like you don't want a penis or a partner. It sounds like you want a dildo. You want it big. You want it hard. You want it to stay hard. That's not how people work. You know what I mean? And if you want health and relationality, you have to be willing to accommodate human beings, which means diversity. And that's going to happen.
So the bottom line with that guy is it's most likely the women he's choosing are just not nice women.
Agreed. I really honestly agree with that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you satisfied with that answer?
I am.
Are we ending on that note?
No, we want to end. We want to end on hearing about Rebel Love.
Oh,
and anything
right.
else you'd like to plug?
Yeah, no, just I guess Rebel Love book comes out in January. It's available for pre-order, and it's just really sex positive, body positive. It talks about rape culture, toxic masculinity. It's one of the few books on sex that isn't gendered and is trying to move us away from gender norms and really, you know, sex positive, kink positive. And
sounds great. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you. And okay. check out my podcast I do with Amber. It drops every Thursday on Podcast One. And then check out my radio show Loveline, which is on radio.com streaming app every night. And that's it.
We have one other question for you.
Yes, we do.
Oh gosh.
We end with the same one every time. Have you ever walked in on a parent having sex, or have they ever walked in on you having sex?
No to both.
All right.
No to
all
both.
Right, well, it's okay.
It's quite all right. You probably,
we'll still love you.
Have you been walked in on by your mom?
No.
I mean, has he walked in on
you? You obviously know how much sex I'm having. Yes, and obviously right. how much sex she's having. So
not obviously. I'm just saying he has walked in on me.
Yeah.
When he
happened.
Was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't happened recently, thank God, but it did happen.
I don't even remember it, but she claims it did.
I totally remember it.
I blocked it out. Well, Dr. Chris Donahue, yes. thank you so
thank
much
you
for
guys.
Coming on the show.
This is so fun. So
I know. You're a rock star. If you want to hear more from Dr. Chris Donahue, go to our Patreon. patreon.com/sextalkwithmymom. We talk with him for another 10 minutes all about porn, anal as a benchmark. Mom, what do you think about that little bonus episode we did?
Oh my God, it's so fabulous. You do not want to miss it. patreon.com/sextalkwithmymom.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.